Good Friday. This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, July 23rd, 2021. This is KUAF, your public radio station. I'm Kyle Kellums. KUAF is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. On our show today, the question of whether there should be masks worn by children in schools as the Delta variant surges. Ozarks at Large's Matthew Moore talks with a state legislator and with a Springdale teacher. That's in about 3 minutes. After Ozarks on Science Friday, a conversation with the U.S. Surgeon General about the COVID-19 pandemic and what lies beyond. Plus, humpback whale communication is both ancient and complex. Researchers are still decoding it, from how they say hello to the mystery of sudden changes in their elaborate mating songs. Science Friday begins at 1 on KUAF. A summer surge of COVID-19 is unrelenting in Arkansas. Yesterday, the Arkansas Department of Health reported 1,860 new cases and 15 newly reported deaths from the virus. Hospitalizations ticked up by the net of one patient, but more than 9,000 vaccines were administered yesterday in Arkansas. That's a big increase over the past several days. Governor Asa Hutchinson says resuming in-person instruction in Arkansas schools was one of the best decisions he made. He made that comment yesterday during the Reagan Institute Summit on Education in Washington, D.C. Concerning the upcoming school year, Governor Hutchinson says the state has a ready-for-learning plan that's being adjusted this year that will give advice on how to lessen the spread of the pandemic. One aspect, more vaccinations.
We're trying to really increase our vaccination rate between now and the time school starts. We're going to have, emphasis on good ventilation. We're going to have some layered public health measures as you go into the classroom. And then, of course, if they're not vaccinated, they should be wearing masks. We just won't be mandating it.
During this year's legislative session, laws were passed banning the requirement of both masks and vaccinations. Governor Hutchinson's comments come the same day that a group of Democratic state lawmakers issued a letter to the governor and legislative leaders asking for a special session to lift the ban on mask mandates before the school year begins. Talk Business and Politics reports home prices in Northwest Arkansas continue to rise. For the first half of 2021, homes sold in Washington and Benton counties carried a combined price tag of more than $1.7 billion, representing about $300 million more spent on homes than the first 6 months of 2020. The average selling price so far this year, more than $307,000. More details available at talkbusiness.net. Arkansas's Attorney General and candidate for the Republican nomination for governor, Leslie Rutledge, is proposing a plan to permanently eliminate Arkansas's personal income tax. She announced the proposal via Twitter yesterday. She says the abolishment of the income tax would make Arkansas better suited to attract new business and compete with other states that have no income taxes, like Texas and Tennessee. She says her plan is a grassroots effort to place a proposed constitutional amendment on the November ballot. And a baseball team from Fort Smith is seeking another state title beginning today. The Fort Smith Sportsman American Legion team, one of 10 teams in the state tournament that opens this afternoon in Conway. This is Ozarks at Large. School will be back in session in less than a month, and that has some parents and teachers concerned. The rise in COVID-19 cases continues in Arkansas, and for many school-aged children, getting a vaccine is not yet an option. When the topic of reestablishing a mask mandate in school began to come up, some state legislators pushed back, noting the recent law that was passed that doesn't allow such things. Ozarks at Large's Matthew Moore spoke with a concerned teacher and with State Senator Trent Garner, and he brings us this report.
On April 19th, Senator Trent Garner of El Dorado sponsored Act 1002, which was an act to end mandatory face covering requirements in the state of Arkansas, and passed overwhelmingly into law. The law prohibits local governments or school districts from imposing mandatory masks. It does still permit private businesses and any healthcare facilities to mandate masks. COVID-19 cases are on the rise in Arkansas. And according to a new report from the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences, it's only going to get worse in the coming weeks. Kyle Smith is a high school math teacher at Harbor High School in Springdale. And with less than a month until students arrive back in the classroom, he's concerned.
So we've done this one year already. We know how to do class and it was not ideal. So my biggest concern is that we aren't willing to take the steps that would be most effective to let us continue teaching. And instead, we're going to have to modify our teaching practices to keep people safe. And I don't want to lose a third year of quality education because a semester was bad enough. Last year's experience was less than ideal. And I'm concerned about what a third year of that is going to do to kids academically.
Smith says at the beginning of the last school year, students were on board and willing to wear masks.
The beginning of the school year, I think everybody came in and they were champs about it. They didn't complain. The compliance was really good at the start. And I think everybody just kind of knew at that point how important it was. I think as the year wore on towards the end, it became more of a challenge to keep everybody complying with the mask requirements, especially as teachers had become vaccinated and as the masking in general became more politicized. It was exhausting to do all year long and kids were a little worn out.
The Delta variant of COVID-19 that is surging through Arkansas is showing itself to be more contagious than the original strain, and especially more contagious for children. As of July 8th, more than 4 million children had been diagnosed with COVID-19, representing 14.2% of all cases, according to the American Academy of Pediatrics. For children under the age of 12, a mask is one of the only safeguards they may have from contracting the virus. Smith recognizes that masks are neither ideal nor the most effective safeguard, but believes it is better than the alternative.
It's not an easy thing to do by any means. The masks and the other accommodations that we had to put in place, they changed the tone and the behavior of a classroom intensely. It's a big barrier to doing a lot of the collaborative things that students need to be doing to learn effectively. But I mean, it's the reality of the situation we're in. We want to teach them as well as we can, but we really want them to be alive at the end of it.
Senator Garner still supports the law that he sponsored and helped pass, saying that Arkansans should have the right to refuse to wear a mask and that it is a personal choice. Garner says the choice to be vaccinated and wear a mask is a matter of personal responsibility. While he does acknowledge the risk for children to go back to school, Senator Garner says parents have options.
Reality is that there is a certain inherent risk for children to go back to school. We're making a choice as a state to allow that if parents want to. And I think that's part of the choice analysis they should make, whether they want to do remote learning or send their kids back, whether they want to wear a mask or not. There's all kind of different options that people should have the ability to do. And we as a state, since we have vaccines that are readily available, if people want to take them and children over the age of 12 can, I think that's a choice that parents and people should be able to make in the state of Arkansas.
With schools coming back into session soon, the conversation of reevaluating the option for local school districts to reinforce mask mandates has come up, and Senator Garner stands by his position. KNWA recently reported that he said it would take around a 30% mortality rate, the historical rate associated with confluent smallpox, before he'd consider supporting a mask mandate. Many people, including Smith, jumped on Twitter to respond to the 30% mortality rate comment from Garner. Senator Garner says his quote was taken out of context.
What I said was, when I asked the question, would I be interested in reinstituting a mask mandate or other measures to combat COVID-19 or similar viruses? What I said was, tomorrow's a new day. You never know what could be around the corner. I said, if next week we had a virus that was comparable to smallpox with this 30% mortality rate, I would definitely examine new short-term measures and restrictions in that manner. I didn't say you'd have to reach 30%. I was pointing out that the initial smallpox in Europe had a roughly 30% mortality rate. Hypothetically, if a new novel virus arrives tomorrow with a similar mortality rate, that is definitely something to consider. COVID-19 in its current state, while being serious and deadly, I don't think rises to that level. There's no set number on what the mortality rate has to be. It has to be the new variant of a new disease or a new variant of COVID-19 with different kind of outcomes before I would adjust the restrictions. As we see it now, while the Delta variant is serious, and it's something we have to pay attention to, I don't think we should reexamine taking away that personal choice from people. So I did not say we have to reach 30%. That was a out of context quote discussing the historical nature of smallpox as a hypothetical for a new virus that could arise tomorrow.
Smith was read the transcript of Garner's statement to Ozarks at Large, but still feels Garner's response is misguided.
Smallpox was around for about 3,000 years. Scientists spent about 200 years working on inoculations for it, and the worldwide vaccination effort took decades. He's talking about short-term responses for long-term problems, and I'm sorry that he doesn't have an appetite for a mask mandate that lasts more than a few weeks and saves hundreds of thousands of lives.
Tom Mars, an attorney based in Rogers, is currently filing a lawsuit to invalidate Act 1002. Mars did not respond to our request for comment, but stated on Twitter that the lawsuit will be filed on behalf of all K-12 parents in Arkansas. When it comes to the COVID-19 vaccination, Garner again says it's about personal choice and personal responsibility.
And I think that people should take the vaccination if they feel comfortable doing it. Like I said from the beginning, and being consistent on, if you want to take the vaccine, I think you should.
The Arkansas Department of Health recently reported the first two deaths of children under the age of 18 due to the coronavirus. Senator Garner says that the death of any Arkansan from COVID-19 is tragic, but is adamantly opposed to mandates of any kind around preventative care for the virus.
But the government coming down and forcing people to take a non-FDA-approved vaccine that is so early in its life cycle is a step too far. And I think that doing that would have severe consequences to our personal liberty and freedom.
Have you had an opportunity to get the vaccine yet, Senator?
I don't discuss personal health choices with people. It's everybody's personal choice, and I don't give that opinion out.
Public schools in Arkansas starts in 26 days. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Matthew Moore.
To illustrate the dangerous resurgence of COVID-19 cases at Washington Regional Medical Center in Fayetteville, Dr. Michael Boulding, a veteran pandemic hospitalist, agreed to be filmed by his media team inside WRMC's COVID-19 unit. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich alerted us to the audio. Take a listen.
I'm Dr. Michael Boulding. I've been working our COVID unit for the last 16 months. I get asked on a daily basis now what our COVID unit looks like. So recently, I've seen a dramatic rise in 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds, unvaccinated patients who are not coming in through the ER, requiring oxygen in small amounts and being hospitalized for a day or two. But younger, healthier patients with no comorbid conditions ending up on ventilators, BiPAP, high flow oxygen, and extremely sick, sicker than at any time during this pandemic. I have had to call multiple fathers and mothers of preschoolers in their 20s and 30s and tell them that their spouse may very well not survive this hospitalization. I cannot explain in words the fatigue that your local healthcare providers have right now. We will be here and will continue to until this pandemic is over, but we really need your help to help us. For every day and week and month we go by with this low of a vaccination rate, we are encouraging new variants. The treatment is not coming in the COVID unit and getting a certain medicine. The cure for this virus, the way we get through this pandemic, is to be vaccinated. What I really wish you could see is to look into the eyes of a young father or a gentleman who knows that they may be short for this world because they didn't get their vaccine. And the regret and remorse on their face and fear, I can't show you, I can't describe. It certainly will be with me forever. But that look on a patient's face, I promise you, would be more motivating than anything to go ahead and get your vaccine if you have not already.
You can find a link to that video at OzarksAtLarge.com. The Oklahoma State Department of Health is recording another day of more than 1,000 new cases of COVID-19. Today's report includes nearly 1,200 new cases and 7 newly reported deaths from the virus. Our usual Friday contributor, Michael Tilley, with Talk Business and Politics, is unable to join us this Friday. Our schedules should align again next Friday. If Michael were here, he'd likely want you to know that the tourism tracker, produced by Talk Business and Politics, indicates the tourism industry in Arkansas is recovering from the pandemic year of 2020. The latest report shows the state's 2% tourism tax revenue for the first 4 months of 2021 is a bit more than $5.1 million. That's up 42% over the first 4 months of 2020. The state's tourism numbers had a record year in 2019, but of course suffered double-digit declines last year during the pandemic. The full report can be found at talkbusiness.net. The Arkansas Department of Agriculture is accepting applications for proposals to develop, improve, and or promote urban and community trees and forests. Grants will be funded through a $40,000 grant from the U.S. Forest Service. Maximum federal cost share of any project is 50%. Application deadline is September 13th. Awards announced on or before September 24th. You can find out much more at agriculture.arkansas.gov. Just ahead on this Friday Ozarks, covering all of the Oz trails in Bentonville and Bella Vista on a bicycle in one day. It takes planning. It takes nutrition. It takes a sense of direction. Details in about 30 seconds.
KUAF is supported by Arcom Plus, offering printing, binding, graphic design, and more. Open 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Orders can be submitted via email, telephone, or walk-in service is available. PrintingNWA.com or 444-7711 for additional information. America's Got Talent contestant Lindsey Stirling comes to the Walmart Amp in Rogers Tuesday, July 27th. This American violinist, singer, songwriter, and dancer's show include large-scale visual effects, choreography, and theatrical staging. AmpTickets.com or 443-5600 for tickets and more information.
This is Ozarks at Large. If you want to cover all of the trails in Northwest Arkansas, well, you'll need more than just one day. Even if you wanted to just ride your mountain bike across the Oz Trail system in Bentonville and Bella Vista, you'd need to set aside at least a weekend, unless you are Payson McElveen, a professional mountain biker. He covered the Bentonville and Bella Vista Oz Trails in one day. This week, we reached Payson by Zoom and asked J.T. Guerin, a spokesperson with Oz Trails, to join us for the conversation. Payson has accomplished single-day feats like this in other places, first in his hometown of Durango, Colorado. For such an achievement on a trail system that isn't just a straight line, but a web of interconnecting trails, there has to be prep work.
The physical preparation part I have down better at this point than the navigational part. The navigational part is sort of the exciting frontier for me. I spend nearly every day training, and I have done that for over 10 years at this point. So while that part is very hard work, I know how to do it. The navigational aspect is new to me, particularly this sort of challenge. You know, typically when I'm doing something challenging navigation wise, I'm covering a mountain range end to end or trying to traverse a very long single route. But with this sort of challenge, when I'm trying to ride at least most of every single trail, and the trail network is a seemingly endless spider web of trail, it becomes quite the challenge. And much of the challenge is the route that you put together before you even start the ride. Kind of the trick is to ride all of the trails without having to double back too much. So that was weeks of planning. And then I basically made a GPS route with a whole bunch of waypoints, loaded that into my bike computer. And that gave me turn-by-turn navigation. Even so, despite that, I got off course about 4 hours in and spent quite a while kind of untangling things in my head before getting back on track and going back and checking off the list what I needed to. So I would say physically, of course, this is a big challenge, but the navigational aspect is as big of a challenge.
What led you to Bentonville?
Well, you know, when I did this sort of challenge in my hometown, it was a very surprising experience in some ways because it just gave me a much deeper appreciation for my backyard. I didn't expect that. And did so in a way that extended beyond just the athletic stuff and extended beyond the trails. Because when you spend a whole bunch of hours in a row riding all the trails, you run into a lot of people, all kinds of trail users, riders, hikers, and the community really rallied behind it. And that was very much a grassroots kind of off the cuff effort. But I came away just with a huge appreciation for its potential. And so I started thinking about some of the other places that this concept could be applied. And there are the obvious ones that are the mountain bike meccas, so to speak. And that might be Moab, Crested Butte, Sedona, places like that. But really at the top of the list these days is Bentonville. And I picked Bentonville because the way that it has risen to prominence so rapidly is really of interest. And I wanted to pull back the curtain on how that came to be. And really to do that, I felt like getting in touch with the community and interacting with the people there that make this place what it is and make the trail system what it is was really key. So that's why I picked Bentonville. It was really just personal curiosity, you know, how has this relatively small town just risen to prominence as the mountain bike capital of the world so quickly?
JT Garen, let me bring you in here. What does it make you think when you hear someone like Payson say, well, there's Moab, there's Sedona, there's Crested Butte, oh, and Bentonville near the top of the list as well?
Well, it's confirmation of what we already believe, which is that we have a world-class network of trails here in Northwest Arkansas. And to have an internationally known accomplished athlete like Payson say that is validation. And not only do we believe that we have an exceptional trail system, but we have the mountain biking culture to support it, which I know is a large part of the reason why Payson was eager to come and tackle Bentonville and Bella Vista's trails in this challenge.
We've done stories on the Oz Trail and the system, but give us some of the statistics, JT, of what Payson accomplished here.
Well, I'll let Payson talk specifically about what he accomplished, but in the trail system at large, we're talking about 130, 140 trails in Bentonville, Bella Vista, about over 300 miles of trails in Northwest Arkansas of Oz Trails. And we're seeing a mile and a half of new trail being built every single week right here in Northwest Arkansas. Part of what makes our trail system so unique is not only the purpose-built nature of it, but it's also the locations, the ease of access. In Oz Trails, you can hop on a trail from our downtowns. You can hop on a trail sometimes literally from people's backyards. And that's unique in the mountain biking world and is a huge asset to bring people to the region and also for folks already here to experience the trails in a pretty easy and accessible way.
Payson, if you don't mind, mileage, time consumed, all of that sort of statistical information.
Yeah, so it ended up being a little over 142 miles. And it's funny, the running joke was, like JT mentioned, trail is getting built so quickly that once I finished, I was going to have to go back and ride, you know, a couple hundred yards more of some trail that got built today. And that was one of the challenges navigation-wise, as well as a lot of the trail isn't even on the map yet. The maps can't keep up. So there was a lot of, discussion just with community members and residents of Bentonville kind of helping me get the local knowledge about, you know, a couple of trails that I needed to tack on that you wouldn't even find on a map yet. Total duration was about 17 hours. Moving time was almost 14. There was 16,000 feet of climbing. I burned over 10,000 calories. And I think we counted it. Like I said, it's hard to keep track, but I think it was 126 individual trails. So, you know, categorized green trail, blue trail, black diamond, each with their own name, each with their own flavor. So it was certainly a lot to keep track of.
And it's this effort, this feat is documented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of the main goals. from my standpoint, you know, one of the ways that I am able to have the job that I do is through storytelling. And it's something that I really, really enjoy. I love racing. I love winning races, but I love storytelling as well. And I knew this was going to be a unique story. So going out and doing this challenge physically and logistically is one thing, but simultaneously telling a story and hopefully a beautiful story, a compelling story about it, added quite a bit of extra work, but it was enjoyable work. So we produced about an 18-minute film. It can be found on my YouTube page, which is can just be found at my name. And we also wanted to create a bit of a takeaway for viewers. A lot of times these films are inspirational, motivational. They inspire people to get out the door. But I wanted to take that a step further and make it really interactive. So we included this huge gear giveaway. A bunch of my sponsors donated a ton of gear. And at the end of the calendar year, we're going to pick two winners. And basically to participate in this gear giveaway, we've asked anyone from anywhere, could be a Bentonville local, Bella Vista local, could be someone from halfway around the world, can come and also ride all of Bentonville and Bella Vista's trails. They don't have to do it all in one day like I did. They can do it at whatever pace they want, in whatever order they want, with as many friends as they want. But we just ask that they document their journey. So they do some storytelling of their own. And we'll pick the two most compelling stories, the stories that we felt were the most interesting and inspiring in their own right. And so those folks will get to win quite the prize package at the end of the year. And they're telling those stories on social media, and we're using the hashtag Bentonville Trail Challenge to kind of aggregate all of those stories so that we can keep track of all the personal journeys that are going on out there.
17 hours. Are you eating and drinking while pedaling?
Like crazy. It's the only way to get through something like this. The nutritional aspect is one of the most challenging things also. And I wanted to do this self-supported, which means I didn't have anyone out there handing me water or handing me food out on the trail. So there were two refuel points that I used. One was a gas station in Bella Vista, and another was a Walgreens in Bella Vista pretty late at night. But I carried lots of ride food, like Clif bars and that sort of thing, lots of electrolyte drinks. But yeah, you need to consume a whole lot of calories and frequently. So I try to eat something every 30 to 45 minutes, and be taking, you know, small sips every 15 to 20 minutes.
Do you talk or sing to yourself during this?
Yeah, great question. I love that question. I've actually never been asked that. But yes, absolutely. You know, it's funny. One of the reasons that, a personal journey like this is so special is you go into this fugue state, almost a zone state. And when you do something for this long, especially in my experience, something, a bike ride like this, bike riding innately is so rhythmic, that you just slip into this, almost ulterior, or parallel universe that just completely, you feel completely integrated with the place. And so, yeah, I mean, you do all kinds of funny stuff out there. You know, I'll have a close call on a rock section, you know, talk to myself to, you know, simmer down a little bit or be careful. Other times, yeah, I've absolutely been singing before because you just have so much fun. And then all of a sudden you'll come around a corner and there'll be a family there walking and you'll be kind of jolted back to reality and try to stop singing before they hear you. But yeah, all kinds of funny stuff happens.
JT, I'm not going to ask you to pick a favorite spot of trail in Bentonville or Bella Vista, but if you were going to suggest to someone who is an Oz Trail neophyte where to put in, we'll make it like the Buffalo River terminology, where would you suggest they start?
I would probably say Kohler is a great place to start. And the reason I would say Kohler is because in one really beautiful, quaint location, you can do any level, any skill level of trail you want. So if you show up there and you want to ride the Greenway, you want to ride on a paved trail, you can do that. If you want to do Here's Johnny, which is that very difficult technical rock that Payson was just referencing, you can do that as well. So I would recommend Kohler. And if you also just want to kick your feet off you know, step into the creek, you can do that as well.
JT Guerin is a spokesperson with Oz Trails, and Payson McElveen is a professional mountain biker who covered all of the Oz Trails in Bentonville and Bella Vista in one day. He lives in Durango, Colorado. They both talked to us this week via Zoom. More about Oz Trails at oztrails.com, and you can follow Payson McElveen on most social media platforms. His handle, at Payson McElveen. And this is Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. With me through Zoom is Rhonda Dillard, Underwriting Director at KUAF. Rhonda, happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you.
One of these days I'll just bring you on without something to give away. We'll just talk. But right now you do have something to give away. We're about to give some tickets to a show that's going to be at the Walmart Amp on Tuesday night.
We are indeed. And I can say this is the first time we've ever given away meet and greet VIP tickets to any of the events at the AMP. Mm. So this was a pretty big deal, and we had a ton of entries. And it is for a violinist, a singer, dancer, Lindsay Sterling, and it's called the Artemis Tour, and she is performing with the opening at Kaiza. As you said, it'll be Tuesday on July the 27th.
All right. So folks had a couple of weeks to enter the contest, and we have a winner who receives two tickets. Is that correct?
That is correct. And these two tickets are premium seats in the first three rows. It also includes a meet and greet with Lindsay Sterling herself, a photo. You get to sit in on a motivational speech. Not sure what that means, but it sounds very interesting. And some other items too, an autographed journal,
wow,
laminate. Big deal. Yeah, yeah, a really big deal. It's going to make someone very, very happy.
Who is it going to make very, very happy?
The winner is Haith Bingeling of Fayetteville.
All right, Haith, congratulations. And that's two. Haith gets to take somebody else to enjoy all,
yes,
of this on Tuesday night.
Yes, and we will. I will be in contact with the Walmart Amp and share their name with them. And those two groups can get together and get everything all set up.
All right, what are we going to give away next? Do you know yet?
Well, I do know.
Oh, but you can't tell us.
And it may. No, I can't.
Oh.
It may or may not be tickets to Jim Gaffigan. Just maybe.
Okay.
May or may not be tickets to Rocklahoma. Maybe,
okay,
Melissa Etheridge. I don't know. We've got some pretty fun stuff up and coming.
So what you're telling me is eventually all of those will be giveaway packages. You just don't know which one's next.
I know, but you're going to, okay, have to tune in to find out.
Right. Okay.
You can always check KUF.com and we'll have the information up there.
This is why you only get to come on the show when you're giving something away. You don't play nice, Rhonda.
Sorry.
Rhonda Dillard is our underwriting director at KUAF. Rhonda, always a pleasure to talk to you. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you, guys.
Some people thrive in high-pressure situations. And some don't.
Choking occurs when you feel the most pressure, you want to put your best foot forward, you know how to do it. And then all of a sudden, you just can't pull it off.
How to fight anxiety when it matters most, this week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Hidden Brain, tomorrow afternoon at 3 and Sunday morning at 6 on KUAF. The U.S. Marshals Museum in Fort Smith is closer to its fundraising goal after an anonymous $5 million matching gift announced yesterday. Patrick Weeks, the president and CEO of the museum, says the gift means there is about $7.5 million left to raise.
And this is going to be the next step to start to go into production and get this thing open to the public. So we're pretty fired up about it. And the fact that it's a matching gift is just really exciting for us, because that'll help close the next $3 to $5 million and get us going.
Weeks says the total capital campaign is more than $48 million. And the $5 million gift is a major chunk of an $8 million cost for production to begin to build out galleries and get the full museum closer to opening. He says there are a number of strategies in place to cross the ultimate fundraising goal line.
And we have a number of prospects and some relationships that we are stewarding. And we think that we have the end in sight for sure.
Patrick Week says the museum continues to reach out not just in the region, but across the country.
And we're telling a national story. You know, there are 94 federal districts across the United States, and every one of them has a U.S. Marshal and deputy marshals that are doing the job now. So we are getting phone calls all the time from people across the country that are waiting for this museum to get open so they can come and see it.
Patrick Week says projections suggest a $13 to $22 million economic impact in Sebastian County when the museum opens, and there will be an opportunity to visit the museum before that eventual official opening. This September, a temporary gallery will host an exhibition.
Remembering 9/11 and 20 years of impact, it'll be open to the public, probably only on weekends, at no cost. It'll be photo-based and images that you've never seen before. It'll be from the personal collections of marshals and deputy marshals that were there in the aftermath of 9/11 at Ground Zero and in the airports and beyond.
Patrick Weeks is the president and CEO of the United States Marshals Museum in Fort Smith. Yesterday, it was announced that there is an anonymous $5 million matching gift made to the museum.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. KUAF is supported by Pack Rat Outdoor Center in Fayetteville, serving Northwest Arkansas since 1973 with adventure gear and clothing for hiking, kayaking, and more. Pack Rat carries dog packs, life vests, and accessories for the furry family member, too. Dedicated to conservation and waste reduction, PackRatOC.com. For online shopping, shipping, or curbside pickup. KUAF is supported by Little Guys Movers, built on family values and community involvement for over 28 years. Little Guys Movers focused on changing the image of the moving industry, one move at a time. LittleGuys.com for more information.
We are moving right through July. Helping us move right through July is Becca Martin Brown, the features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Becca, welcome back to Ozarks at Large.
Thank you so much. One of these days I'll actually see you in person.
We'll be here.
I know. I may come out sometime. Actually, I came out to go see rehearsal for the Arkansas Public Theater show that's opening this weekend. And I strongly would encourage people to go and do that. They're actually doing two shows in repertory.
Okay.
In Inherit the Wind.
Oh.
A classic.
Yeah.
And Our Town.
A classic.
A classic, which was one of the first couple of shows I ever saw as a kid.
Oh, I think a lot of us can make that claim. Don't you think? A lot of people, that's one of the first serious theatrical works you'll see produced somewhere.
I saw it, and I saw Arsenic and Old Lace, and I fell in love with theater. And the Our Town section of our newspaper is named for the play.
I
got to name it, and that's what it's named for. Because they're being done in repertory, which means every other night,
mm-hmm.
very minimal sets, interesting costuming. Like Inherit the Wind is, all the costuming is black and white, but not necessarily of the same time period. Everything you need to know about Our Town is that the stage manager slash Greek chorus slash main character is a young African-American woman.
Excellent. Our Town, in my mind, doesn't lend itself to much more than a stark sort of set, right? I mean,
no, it doesn't.
But Inherit the Wind, you think about the courtroom and things like that.
But they've done it with a couple of tables and several chairs and a banner that says "Read Your Bible," and it works really well.
And we should remind
it works surprisingly well.
We should remind our listeners that Inherit the Wind is, you know, based on the Scopes monkey trial of the 1920s in Tennessee.
Right. And Our Town is basically the story of a little town in New Hampshire. It could be a little town in Madison County or a little town anywhere else where you see a few years in the life of the people. It starts with a birth. It ends with a death, just like real life. And it is a lot more poignant when you're this age than it was when I was 11.
I bet. And And the town's Grover's Corners, if I have my memory still intact.
You are correct. Yeah. You really got to go. You got to go two nights if you want to see them both, but you really got to go. Tonight is Inherit the Wind. Tomorrow night is Our Town. And then it continues that way through August 8th. Tickets start at $10 at Arkansas Public Theater at the Victory in Rogers. You can find out more at arkansaspublictheater.org or check out this Sunday's What's Up, because it's the cover story and it'll tell you everything you ever wanted to know.
Excellent.
I hope. It's supposed to. The Fort Smith Symphony has announced its 21-22 season. I love John Jeter.
How can you not?
The music director. He is the hardest working, most amazing. You know, they managed to do full concerts almost throughout the COVID-19 shutdown.
Well, and they thought about it long and hard how to do it, too. It was well
they
planned.
Did.
Yes.
And now they've taken all the things they've learned and are incorporating those things into the new season. One of them is that they're moving the concerts forward half an hour.
Interesting.
Because during the COVID thing, they did a 5 o'clock and a 7:30 or a 5:30 and a 7:30. I've forgotten. They did one early one and one later one. People liked earlier, so they've moved from 7:30 to 7.
Okay.
People liked having the concert without interruption, so the performances are going to be about 75 minutes without intermission.
Interesting.
They're going to have a post-concert after-party at the Bakery District across the street, and they'll have social time and then post-concert music, like the Cool Cats Jazz Quartet or the String Quartet. So it's going to be a fun year, but here's the part that I'm the most excited about.
That is?
Come April 2nd of next year, they will be doing one of the things where they show the movie, but the sound, the musical soundtrack has been lifted out of it, and the symphony will play.
Yes.
And the movie is Raiders of the Lost Ark. So check out all of this in Sunday's What's Up, or you can visit fortsmithsymphony.org. Season tickets are currently on sale to new subscribers. And then they'll offer single tickets to shows in late August. And then this weekend, if you can't wait for classical music, there's a new series called Chamber Music on the Mountain.
I'm telling you, I mean, it's music every night. Some of it, much of it is free. It's wonderful musicians. You can't go wrong.
Absolutely. I love these two musicians, Tomoko Kashiwagi and Mio Otosakone. Love them.
Yes.
Love them. They were the first live music we saw at the Walton Arts Center after COVID. So they will always have a place in my heart. And they're the ones behind this idea of chamber music all over Northwest Arkansas, Mount Sequoia and Crystal Bridges and everywhere. And you can check all of that out at chambermusiconthemountain.org or find it on our website from the story. And there is a concert tonight, a concert tomorrow night, a concert Sunday afternoon, a concert the 29th, a concert the 30th, and a concert the 31st. If you're looking for something to do with the kids, the Young Actors Guild down in the River Valley is doing Big Fish this weekend.
Yes.
7 o'clock today and tomorrow, 2 o'clock tomorrow and Sunday. The director of this company is Missy Gibson, and that should be everything you need to know.
Exactly.
It'll be fun.
Yes.
And it's at the Alma Performing Arts Center, which is a beautiful facility. And you can find out more about that by calling 632-2129. And then to jump on to your There's Music Everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of music. John Two Hawks, the Native American flutist,
your friend
has a new
mine.
Book out called Mist and Stone.
Mm-hmm.
And he has an artist reception from 6 to 8 o'clock tomorrow night at the Community Creative Center at Nadine Baum Studios in Fayetteville. Oh, and if you haven't caught it yet, Theater Squared continues its performances of Matilda the Musical through Sunday in the new event center at the Fayetteville Public Library. And you want to catch that before it gets away. So
absolutely.
Put on your roller skates, grab your time turner. Good luck.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Becca, as always, we appreciate your time.
Thank you. See you next week, guys.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Matthew Moore, and with me here across the desk is Kyle Kellums. Hello, Kyle.
Hello, Matthew.
Kyle, we are here for a very important new segment that we're trying out on Ozarks at Large. We're calling it Two Things.
Right. And look, in this age of so many opportunities to watch, read, and experience, it can be overwhelming. What do I watch? What do I eat? Where do I go? So we're going to ask people who work here and people who work outside of this building for suggestions.
Absolutely. And what better person to start with first than our own Kyle Kellums?
Because I always have suggestions.
That's absolutely true. So let's lay a little bit of groundwork around what we mean by two things. The concept of this comes from the idea that nearly every morning I walk into your office and I have two things that I want to tell you. One thing is usually work-related. One thing is not.
Right.
And I come in every day and I say two things, and then it usually transgresses into about seven or eight things.
Oh, no, no. Give yourself a break. It's usually three or four.
Okay, that's fair. So the idea of this is we want to offer our listeners two things, at least, that you were excited about.
Yes.
Those can be new music, old music, films, entertainment, a new path to walk the dog on,
a restaurant dish, a film to stream, anything that would, you know, occupy your mind.
Absolutely. And so, Kyle.
Yes.
You have more than two things for me today.
I right? I do have. These are things that I am excited about at this very moment. And one is starting later tonight. It's what we call in the United States team handball at the Summer Games, which most of the rest of the world just calls handball. And it is a sport that should be wildly popular in the United States. Imagine if basketball and soccer got together and created a game. It's inside. It's on a court. There is a goal with a goalkeeper. You can pick the ball up. You can dribble it. You can run with it. It's high scoring. There's some contact, and it's exciting as can be.
Why would we call it team handball and other places call it handball? Is there individual handball?
Well, in the United States, there's the sport handball that is sort of racquetball without a racket that you play on a court against a wall, and you actually smack a black little rubber ball against your hand. So that's what we call handball. This handball is a team sport with seven players on each side.
Are Americans any good at team handball?
To my knowledge, the only time we've ever been invited or qualified for the Summer Olympics, the Atlanta Games, when they decided that host countries should have a team. You know, the training center is in Alabama. There is a very dedicated Facebook group, of which I'm a member of, that we think that someday the U.S. could be very good at it. We've come up with our own dream handball teams. LeBron would be on it. He'd be amazing. But no, Americans are not only not traditionally good at it, traditionally not interested in it.
Hmm. The real question is, who are you cheering for?
Ah, great question, because much like international soccer, international handball competitions have those same teams that rise to the top. Finland, I mean, not necessarily the same in both sports, but every year, you know, Germany's going to be good, Norway's going to be good, Spain. So I root for the North American or African teams that make it, and hopefully they will advance. But almost every year, it's one of the European teams that take it the most seriously that win. So I'm looking forward to that starting tonight, and there's a special handball channel if you have the NBC package for the Olympics. During the pandemic, my wife, Laura, and I started picking up one situation comedy at a time that we'd watch one episode per night. We watched The Office, Parks and Recreation, New Girl, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Right now, we're in the middle of Community, which was on NBC for five seasons, then one more season on Yahoo when they were doing original programming. Maybe they still are. No one knows. I love Community. It was created by Dan Harmon, and it's about seven community college students and a few of the people they know. And what it's like to be at a community college in this fictional town of Greendale, Colorado. It's weird, it's meta, but it's ultimately so sweet.
Where would you put it on the scale of sitcoms when we think of, you know, on one end we may think of like The Big Bang Theory, on the other end we think of, I can't even think of something on the opposite end, but
you know, it's far from The Big Bang Theory. I mean, you know, it's single camera, no laugh track. And I can't stress just how different it is, especially considering that it was on network television, you know, in what, the teens, the 2000 teens. The closest relative it would have, I think, in broadcast would be Arrested Development. But it's got a sense of Parks and Recreation and Brooklyn Nine-Nine and The Good Place in that the characters, while flawed, ultimately care for each other.
Okay, Kyle, your third thing.
All right, and this is a local thing that I just experienced for the first time last weekend, and it's the monthly gathering called Beer and Hymns. It's a band that gets together, and it's they have a theme every month, and it's a sing-along, though you don't have to sing, and it lives up to its name. It's beer, because I went at the Tawnytown Winery, and they had beer for sale there. Often it's in Bentonville at Bike Rack Brewing, and they have beer there. And like this month's theme is Stars and Stripes because it's July. They're hymns. They played How Great Thou Art. Hank Williams, I don't know if you'd call this a hymn, but I Saw the Light. But it's also songs, Miley Cyrus, Party in the USA, Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA.
Those are both definitely hymns.
Well, I think you could call it beer, hymns, and anthems.
Mm.
But, you know, they played Lift Up Every Voice, the
African-American National
Anthem. Right, thank you. And it is just a great gathering of people, and it's no pressure, and it's just a really good time. They did Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah, and the crowd kind of got into that. They did Will the Saints Go Marching In. They're a well-tuned, tight band, and it's about good time and community, and I would suggest going in the near future.
So what happens if you don't know the words?
Oh, they have a song sheet.
Oh, great.
And you know the order they're going to go in. They've already determined that. It's not like a request. And again, you can sing along if you want. You can sing along if you don't want. But you can enjoy great music and fellowship.
I remember when I was really small, my parents went and saw the Eagles on the Hell Freezes Over tour. And,
oh, God.
And my dad got really mad at my mom at the concert the entire time because she insisted on singing along
to
every song.
Your dad kind of has a point because, you know, when you go to a concert and you've paid good money to see it, you kind of want to hear Glenn Frey or whomever sing. This is intended to be a sing-along. You can sing as loud or as softly as you want. It's like being in church, right? You don't have to sing in church, I don't think.
No, it's not
okay.
A requirement.
All right, very good.
It's strongly suggested.
Yes. Well, this is offered. It's even gentler than that.
Right. So if you're my mom and you're looking to go to a concert where you can actually be encouraged to sing along,
she should go to Beer and Hymns.
Absolutely.
Handball, community, beer and hymns. Those are my two things.
Awesome. Thank you, Kyle.
In the background is bassist Ray Drummond doing a tune called Susanita. And I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz, every Friday and Saturday here on KUAF. We'll hear more from Ray, and we'll also hear from Abby Lincoln, Ella Fitzgerald, Errol Garner, the Count Basie Orchestra, Kurt Elling, and much more. Shades of Jazz, here on KUAF.
This is 91.3 KUAF. Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Mulberry. KUAF is a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. Timothy Dennis produced today's show next door in the Harold and Blanche Cox News Studio. Contributors to this Friday edition of Ozarks at Large included Matthew Moore, Jacqueline Froelich, who provided us the audio from the doctor at Washington Regional Medical Center, plus our usual Friday guest, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. We do return Sunday morning at 9 with another edition of Weekend Ozarks at Large. And, of course, our plan is to be back with you noon and 7 p.m. Monday for a brand-new Monday edition of Ozarks at Large. That show will include our regular Monday visit with Randy Dixon from the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. He's giving us a bona fide time capsule on Monday. We'll see what happened 27 years ago to the day on Monday's show. You can always find us online at ozarksatlarge.com. You can always listen to us whenever you'd like by subscribing to the free podcast edition of our daily show that's available at KUAF.com or any of the major podcast distributors that already give you other podcasts. You can also ask your smart speaker to please play Ozarks at Large and hear the most recent edition of our show. And you can use the newly updated KUAF app to hear the show as well. I'm Kyle Kellums. Take care of yourself.